they stay there, and they say yeah, and they say there.
Going in on the verse, cause I never been defeated and I won't stop now. Whoa. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't make it in my folks locked down. Whoa. I never went nowhere, know what they sayin', Luda's back. Yeah. Blame it on that conjure, the hood call it Luda Yak. Hey. And I'm on this foolish track, so I spit my foolish flow. My hands go up and down, down, like strippers' booties go. Whoa. My verses still be serving, yeah, tight like a million versions. Yeah. Last time on a college remix, now I'm on the original version. Yeah. Can't never count me out, no, y'all better count me in. Yeah. Got 20 bank accounts. Accountants count me in, make millions every year, but South champion. Cause all I do, all I do
is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Head on a swivel, you know serving me's a no-no. Clean as a whistle as I pull out in my Rolls Royce. Yellow bone passenger, they see it, they say, oh boy. Shell Kelly, back it up, my niggas call me loco. Down for armed trafficking, don't make me pull that fofo. Ask you what you laughing at, represent that mud life. Dirty money, bitch, you better get your mud right. We come together, holding hands and holler, mud life. We all strapping all black, it's like mud life.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Kitchen, pot on the stove, water getting boiled, dope being sold, Snoopy in the hookie, system overload. I've been running this rap game since I was 20 years old. I hung with the worst of them, bust till I burst them up, floss them up, toss them up, harder way, close them up. Pardon me, I'm bossing up, pressure up, pressure, bro, don't mess with us. We like the youth in the 80s. Back to back, set a track. Hit the lick, get it back. Get the trick, jump the track. Bitch, I want my money back. Time and time again, while I'm sipping on this gin. Al Davis said it best, just win, baby, win.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
All right, hey, what's going on out there? How y'all doing? Welcome to Voices Unleashed. I am your host, Mr. Talk in the House. Yes, sir, buddy, we ready to rock and roll today. Well, honestly, I don't know, y'all. We tried earlier. There was some reason it just wasn't operating correctly. So we had to call in the technician to come figure out what was going on. But we're here. We got it. And we ready to rock and roll. We have our outstanding show plan for you today, man. We got this author in the house today. He wrote this book called How to Love Your Wife. And, man, it's a good book. Yes, I did read it, y'all. It's a good book. Man, we're going to talk about some of the things in that book and other things, some questions you may have. And we're just going to get it on today. It's Saturday. Y'all through shopping and running around, getting ready to go to the club or whatever. So, hey, hang out with us for a little while. We really do appreciate it. So, and I said all that, let me say this. In order for you to participate in the show today, call in, okay? Or you can listen on your different devices. That is great as well. But to call in, the number is 347-838-8622. Once again, 347-838-8622. And if you want to chat with me or my guest today, Mr. Myers, only thing I do, press the number 1 on your keypad, that lets you know you want to say something, and we'll get you in as soon as we can. All right? Now, usually I say the chat room is open as well, but for some reason, that is acting crazy, too. So we're not even going to worry about a chat room today. So you can always send me an email at ericletz, L-E-T-S, talk at gmail.com. Now, we can talk chat that way if you want to. And if you should happen to have private methods of communicating with me, I look forward to hearing from you that way also. All right, so that's everything I have to say. And being that we are just behind the eight ball right now. And no need for no more music, man. If you heard the first part earlier today, you heard all the music. So no more music today at this moment, okay, at this moment. I have to say it like that, at this moment. Okay, also, let me remind you the rules of the show. No disrespect, no cussing, no attacking each other. None of that crap on this show, okay? Okay? And no advertising of other people's shows on my show. You see, I've been gone for a minute, and y'all seem to have forgotten the way Mr. Talk works. Well, I'm telling you now, that's how it works. Don't come up here talking about nobody else's show and what that happened over there. I don't want to know that. I want to know what we're talking about right here, right now. And right here and right now, we're going to be talking about how to love your wife. And, of course, I didn't write this book, so I will have to bring in the person that actually wrote this book. And his name is Mr. J.A. Myers. And, ladies and gentlemen, welcome him to the show. Mr. Myers, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
All right. You still laughing at me now? In my long tail.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure. Hey. It's a pleasure to be on your show. It means a lot. Thank you very much. It's an honor, and I'm deeply honored that invite would be extended my way. So thank you very much.
Oh man, come on now. Stop all that now. Hey. Trust me, we have to help each other. And it's a good book. It's really a good book. I actually sit down and read it. It's a good book. You know, so I'm more than happy. I'm more than happy to have you on the show and, you know, help advertise this book. Because we agree, there's a lot of people out there need that book. Yeah, buddy. Some of the things in there, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I done seen that for real. So, yeah, it's a great book, man, and we're going to go through some things, and, yeah, we're going to have some fun. We are. We're going to have some fun today. But before we do all that, let's find out something about you. You know, tell us who is Mr. John A. Myers? You know, what makes you you?
My faith, my job, my belief in what I do, my... for lack of a better word, my confidence in what I do and how I do it. And it's being able to stand on what you believe. I don't have to justify it. I just have to stand on it. It's me. And it's too simple. Be who you are and not who you're not.
Be who you are and who you are not. I like that. I like that. Yeah, okay. That makes a whole lot of sense. You know, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. You mentioned that key word, logic, and simple, yeah. Which a lot of people don't understand, but hey, it is what it is. Okay, so.
Right.
Now, I know my callers, you know, and I know one of the questions, when they go back and listen to this a little later, first thing somebody's going to ask me if they don't call in and ask you is, what qualifies you to write this book, How to Love Your Wife? What qualifies you to write that?
Well, the qualifications is, as a Christian counselor, these are some of the things that I constantly see when couples come into counseling, and it's always in these areas keep popping up. And it was just time when it was placed on my heart, that says, hey, we need to get this information out, because there is it's kind of like a lost generation of knowledge when things that sons would get from their dads, watching them walk around the house, watching, and it wasn't like a lecture, it's just watching dad move, how he did things, how he shook hands, how he greeted his friends, how he listened, how he implemented discipline in the house, not as a dictator, but usually when dad said no, it was done. But that information, that generation of knowledge is lost. And it's just me trying to put it back in the system. And, well, I'm not going to say not necessarily lost, but it's not used, and it's slowly fading away. So as I see these things, it's just, I said, you know, it's time to put this on paper. I've had it on paper for a while. And giving shout out to a dynamic editor, bully, thug, you know, she pushed me, she guided me. Like, hey, get this done. So it's just teaching men some things that we haven't been taught. And it was just time.
Okay.
But, and add to it, it teaches men to do things in the way men are supposed to. It doesn't, and it's not designed to feminize us. And mm-hmm. some of the things you read, it seems like it feminizes the man, and it takes you out of what I call your core. Anything that takes you out of your core, you may have issues with. This keeps you in your core. It doesn't belittle any man, woman, or child. It just says, hey, these are the steps that are proven they work.
Okay. All right. Well, we gonna get into those cores and principles and lessons in just a few minutes. Hey, what, man, I'm sorry about the bully. You know, sometimes you just can't do nothing about bullies, okay? You just got to roll with the punch. Okay. Yeah, we sorry. That's an inside joke right there. Okay, anyway. Okay, yeah. Oh, we both in trouble now. Oh, Lord. Okay, so. Oh, okay, let me get back. So this book is basically for men. More so men than women. Can women learn anything from this book? I guess it's the question.
Yes. Yes. Most definite.
Okay.
Women can learn. What a woman can learn is this is what she should be looking for in a man. But also what she can learn is this is how I can help my husband reach his peak, reach his, you know, reach the top and go as high as he can go. But he's not going alone. He's taking her with him. So it's like where steel sharpens steel, as iron sharpens iron. And if it teaches women, hey, this is what you need to look for, but also this is what you need to help support. You can't ask for a man to be successful yet not willing to go through what he has to go through to get that success. You know, and that success may come from sometimes long hours, sometimes difficult days, and you can't say, hey, you're not home, but you've been asking him to be successful. He's working towards the success of the family, yet you're complaining. So mm-hmm. it opens the eyes of the wife to say, I play a role in this, but I play a support role, not a critique role. I am the support. So instead of tearing down, we build up.
Okay. Now, see, that makes sense. But we come back to that later.
Okay.
So what was the most challenging part to writing this book? Was just sitting down and doing it, or, you know, what was the most challenging part of it?
The challenging part in writing the book is writing a book that men will read, because many books you read, they're so long, they're so, I call it, they flood you with too much information. But one of the things that we as men, we can get the point real quick. You don't need to take me through an 8,000-page essay. I got the point. And it's one of the things we used to say in the Marine Corps, hey, I understand the commander's intent. I know what you want. Just be quiet. Let me do what I got to do. So writing a book that would keep men interested enough to read it, yet not bore them. So a lot of things were left out because some of those things are put into the counseling program. If those men come to me, we add those things in. But it's just to build that basic foundation of that relationship and of that manhood.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha. Okay. You know, besides the Marine Corps part, but yeah, we'll let that slide. We still rock the same mud, so we okay. No, don't take that personal. Trust me, I have jokers on here that been in the Air Force. Yeah, and we go at each other sometimes. So you know how it goes. You know how it goes.
I know
we just gonna do what we do. Yeah.
It's well enjoyed.
All right. Exactly. All right, and you're right. The book isn't long. It's only 96 pages long, you know, which shocked me. I'm like, oh, I thought it would be longer than that. But only 96 pages long. I'm like, okay. Yeah, and, you know, sit down and read it. You know, yeah.
Right.
Watch it, you know, watch this sports or something that's boring. You pick it up and start reading. And you'd be like, oh, okay,
right.
All right. But here's something that came to me a couple of days ago once I sat down and looked at your book again, all right? And I thought this was the funniest thing. I want to know, what was your inspiration behind this? On this book, the cover of this book, it says, How to Love Your Wife, right?
Right.
But the cover has a man with his head in his hand. Like, oh, Lord, what am I going to do? What was your inspiration behind that?
The inspiration behind that is, we're talking about the cover. The inspiration behind that cover is sometimes you feel like a failure when you look at some of these books and everybody's having this happy, go lucky, we jump in each other's arms, but it's not reality. The reality is sometimes as a husband, you get stressed out. As a husband, you get fatigued, you get worried, you get, for lack of a better word, you get pissed. And even King Solomon said, man, it's better to be on the rooftop than in the house of a nagging woman. So it actually puts it, it puts it in a realistic standpoint that I think so many men can understand when they look at the cover. Yeah, it is funny, but it's funny because you laugh and say, I know how that brother feels.
Exactly. that was got my attention, you know, I'm like, yeah, I've been there before. Like, what the heck is going on? Yes, I have been there. So, yeah, you have a very valid point on that. And I bet every man that's listening right now say, yeah. But, okay, that's a valid point. Yeah. That is a very valid point. You know, yeah. But, okay. That makes sense, though. I can understand that. So let's get on inside the book here, because I want to get inside the book. Cause, oh, yeah, there's some things we're going to have to talk about. And the first one is, which, you know, I was like, why even do it? The fallacies. Let's talk about the fallacies. And start with the first word, the fallacies of marriage, which was, really at the introduction. One of the first things, I'm sorry. Let me back up for a moment. You said in the introduction, you know, women in their marriages assuming they know all the rules, or at least most of them believe they do. Conversely, men barely know anything about marriage, getting to the altar and beyond. You know, I thought about that. I'm like, is that really true? Is that what your research over the years has found, that's the way couples go into a marriage?
Right, because the man goes into the marriage. As a man, you go into the marriage, and you don't even, many of us don't look at those fine details. Women do. And you got to back up a little bit. In the generation that's coming up, that woman watches her mother do everything. she's better prepared. Many women have driver's license before men. Many women have jobs before men. Many women, they know schools. They got all these things because she's been prepared. Men are entering marriage unprepared. So when it comes down to the wedding, the woman has the whole wedding picked out. The man just has to show up. Show up, say these two words, you're good.
That's so true.
So they come in prepared. We come in thinking, it can't be all that difficult. 5-6 months later, we're on the cover of the book, holding our head in our hand because we didn't get a chance to see Dad do these things. And that's what I'm saying. It's not the verbal teaching from Dad that we didn't get. We also didn't get that visible teaching where I saw how Dad would say, "Hey, babe, wait a few minutes. Let me chill for a minute. Let me think this out. We'll get it done. I don't know how we'll get it done. It's going to get done." So they come in with these fallacies, and then when it hits them, they're like, "Okay, this ain't what I planned." And that's when I see these guys or see these couples, they're saying, "Hey, it's not that I wouldn't have married. I just wish I'd have been better prepared."
Mm, okay. All right. You know, and the way you're explaining it right now makes it so simple. It makes it sound so simple. But if that's the case, why is it so hard? You know, let's see. Another thing you put in here, you put women. They inform their husbands how to act, handle money, raise kids, and what friends are acceptable. Women even break down how a man is supposed to act. Now, when I saw that, I just started laughing because I thought about today's generation, you know, because that's what you see. And, you know, and I'm like, wow, So there's definitely some truth in that. And, you know, I like to go people watching, you know, just go somewhere, sit down, and just watch people. And if you go, say, on a family vacation, cruise or whatever, and you just sit back and people watch, you will notice that the women are the ones saying, "Okay, let's go do this, let's go do that," and the man is walking behind like, "Okay, whatever, you know, I'm going to do it," you know. And
right,
in most cases, you know, when they're a couple, especially an older couple compared to a young couple, even a younger couple do it now, but that's what I have noticed, you know, the untrained eye. That's what I have noticed. So when I read that, I'm like, I see that every day. You know, people don't pay attention to it, but it's noticeable if you know what you're looking for. So that is a very, very valid point, you know?
And here's the thing that you have to be careful.
Okay.
As the man is the head of house, it doesn't mean he's better. It's just the role, the way the husband and the wife is broken down. So the husband he's the head of house. So all guidance, all communication comes through him to the family. In today's society, what happens is the woman changes the husband to the woman's role, or the wife will change the husband, or at least attempt. Let me back up, because that great editor of mine always said, "We're not our people." So most women will change to fit them. No, this is what we're doing. This is how. So what happens is the wife steps up to be the leader, and the husband steps down to be the follower. He can only hold that for so long till his core just drives him crazy and he rebels. He's going to rebel. The first sign of that rebellion is, who do you think you're talking to? The second sign usually is, you are not my mother. The third sign is when he's telling his friends, she ain't talking to me like that, you know, because he's starting to rebel because his core is telling him, you're out of your role. It's time to get back into your role. So those are the changes you see that you've identified, and you know, congratulations, Joe, I picked up a lot of things. You'll see the change, and that's when you know, hey, the role has been changed. We've got to change this back. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense. All right, ladies and gentlemen, for you that's joining a little late, we're having a conversation today with author John A. Myers. He wrote this book called How to Love Your Wife. It's a great book. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Check it out. And it's only 96 pages long because, you know, black people don't like to really read. So it's not that long, y'all, okay? It's not that long. Now, here's something that really made me laugh. Yeah, I like to laugh a lot, okay? So women use the phrase real men to belittle or magnify their man's shortcomings. This is designed to shake men up, change, or gain control over them. In most cases, this behavior stems from homes where the absence of a man is felt and missing in the lives of their sons. You basically have said that already, now that I read it and it hit me. But that phrase, real men, you know, what the heck is that? You know, how is a normal, hardworking man really up to be, live up to being a quote-unquote real man by a woman's mentality, I guess, for lack of a better word?
Well, and that's a good question, because you cannot. The definition of real man constantly changes. And it always changes to where the person who's using it gets more of the benefit, either by elevating themselves up above that person or putting you down. The concept of a real man is there are only two real men ever mentioned in life. One was Adam, and you saw what happened to him, and the other was Christ when he walked the earth. But everybody else is struggling. We achieve adulthood, but we're constantly growing into manhood. We never achieve that because there's constantly we can do better. I can do better tomorrow than I did today, but I have to do better than I did yesterday. So now when you hear that word being thrown at you, well, you're not a real man, the question should always go back, what is a real man? Because when you get the answer, chances are you're doing 75 to 80% of those things and getting better each day. The problem is we look at it and we let them identify, and this is where, as I say, it works for husband and wife. You let the wife identify, or social media identifies, he's not a real man. Now you just got a knife to the heart, and you're going to try to better something that's actually not broken. Because here's the thing I tell men. Real men do not fit in. They always stand out. They never fit in.
That's
if you're fitting
true.
In.
Why would you say that?
Because when you step in a place, you have a certain, it's something special about you that God put in you that's awesome. Why would you change that to fit in with everybody else? There should be something when you walk in the room and somebody says, that guy is different than everybody else. Because everybody else, once again, as we mentioned earlier, everybody else is trying to be who they're not. Be who you are. And your core grows from that because you were designed specifically, individually. Why try to change it? You can improve it. But be careful in trying to change it. It leads to you being controlled, and that can run into a problem.
Okay. Let's see. Also you said a marriage cannot be the responsibility of two imperfect people, husband and wife. Really? The husband and wife must be equally yoked and having the same God who designed the marriage.
Right.
Come on, Johnny. Talk to me now. The responsibility of two imperfect people. Because nobody goes into a marriage perfect. Right?
True. Right.
Okay. So how's the marriage starting off going to be two responsible imperfect people? But you could be saying only one needs to be in.
No, what I'm saying is we go into a marriage and you're putting responsibilities, you're putting expectations on me as if you're perfect. Mm-hmm. And I got to live up to your expectations. Both of us are imperfect, okay. And we're going to make those mistakes. We have to step into the marriage where, hey, I'm going to help you grow and you help me grow. I'm not here to point out all your errors to put you down. I'm here to say, hey, this is how we can do it better. But if, and this is where it's kind of like, and I've dealt with couples in different religious beliefs, not different denominations, but different religious beliefs. And when you get like that, you run into problems because now you're going to have in-law problems because your father and her father are two different gods. And one God is going to require this, and another God requires that. You're going to have problems. So, and one of the things couples say, we can work through this, and I tell them, no, this is something you can't work through.
You really don't think it can be worked through?
Well, because you're dealing with one God, and I'm just being totally transparent because the book is written from a Christian perspective. You're dealing with one God that actually lets you know. He said, I'm jealous. I'm really jealous. I am really, really jealous. I'm really jealous.
Okay.
So now you're dealing with if there is no – they go in different directions, and they will pull you in different directions, meaning the one that serves the creator God, he holds that one individual accountable. So when they mess up, he goes to them. He scolds them. He says, I love you. Those that I love, I discipline. And he says, hey, fix this. Make this right. You made a mistake. Fix it. I'm not coming to you to destroy you. I'm coming to you to say, hey, make this right. Go apologize to her. Go make this right. You messed it up. The one that has no God says, forget her. I can care less. Only reason I'm apologizing is because I got caught. If I didn't get caught, I wouldn't be apologizing. So what plan would you want to live under?
Yeah. So how would you suggest couples, don't even make a decision, flip a coin? How would you, if there was a couple in that situation, okay, what would your suggestion be?
In what situation? Let's be specific.
Okay. If, let's say, the husband and wife, they both had different worships, the religion, gods, or whatever you want to call them, deities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be careful these days.
Right.
And but they were married or talking about getting married. Let's not get to the marriage yet. Let's talk about the getting married, the first step, getting married. What would your advice be to them?
And if I'm giving premarital counseling, these are the things we talk about. Now, you're going to make your own decision. I'm just letting you know the framework of the house you're building. You're going to make your own decision. But you're bringing two different, for lack of a better word, two different spirits in the house, two different spirits. You're bringing one spirit that teaches you and guides you on how to make it right, how to lead your family, how to guide, how to protect, how to stand strong for your family. You're bringing another spirit that says, do whatever you want. Doesn't matter. Don't worry. If you get caught, just say you're sorry. Sneak back out and do it again, whether it's stealing, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, because it's okay to do it. If she doesn't understand, if he doesn't understand, who cares? You're your own man or woman. You have to make a choice. Which one do I want to live by? And you will be held accountable for the choice you make. Good, bad, or indifferent, you're going to be held accountable. Because
but now,
that person... And,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you
no,
go right ahead.
Person,
I want you to finish your thought. Oh, I'm going to remember mine.
Okay.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, well, that person is, like, say, if you're married to a woman that doesn't believe, every time it's time for you to worship, she's going to plan a vacation. Something's going to happen. She's tired, don't want to go. Hey, let's stay home. Let's go here. Let's go to the park. We never go anyplace. We never do anything. Let's do this. So she's going to pull you away. whether intentional, unintentional, she's going to happen. She's going to pull you away. She's going to pull your kids away. When it's time to get, you know, to teach your kids on things that are, and this is the part people miss with serving the God that I serve. Everything he tells us is everything we look for, how to treat each other right, how to honor, how to respect, how to talk to our parents, how to honor our parents, how to love each other, how to ask for forgiveness, how to stand on what you believe, all the things we're doing anyway. The other one teaches us, all the other gods teach you, light a candle and knowing, you know, I'm just taking a stand, this is my belief. If what you're doing is working, good, but if what you're doing is not working, why you still do it? And it's just that plan. And I say, if you can't be, and this is what we call unequally yoked, you are going to run into problems. It's like a husband, you know, you're going to run into problems. It's been tested, tried, true, and proven. You're going to run into problems. Big time problems.
There's no way around that. You're going to run into problems.
There's no way. You're going to run into, and these are serious problems.
Okay. I see that. I do see that point of it. I really do. Huh. But then, you know, the question that comes to mind, are we going to be asking our spouses, not spouse at the time, soon to be spouses because my brain just froze. to choose love over religion, love or religion. You get my point? Because I know there's going to be that argument. Yeah. And that may be viewed that way.
Right. But one of the things you have to look at, And I quote a scripture in Joshua 24. He said, choose you now this day who you're going to serve. He said, but as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And this is where that man is taking a stand. He said, you choose whatever you want to, but if you're going to be part of this house, this is what we're going to do. It's not open for negotiations. And one of the things that, and this is where we've been beat up and haven't been taught, because many of us remember granddad going to church. We remember grandparents going to church. We remember grandma and grandpa sitting in church because granddaddy went to church, and he took everybody to in that house with him. And he lived under the concept of choose you now this day. But if you're in this house, this is what you're going to do. There is no negotiating, no arguing, none of that. I'm sick. Okay, you sit on the back row and be sick. But now we've come to this generation of, I call it effeminate men, where the woman is trying to teach the man how to be a man, which is totally impossible. A woman cannot teach a man how to be a man. It's impossible.
I wholeheartedly agree.
So you come to this generation that says, well, if you're sick, stay home. Well, if you're so now, it's okay to choose another God. It doesn't make a difference as long as you love each other. How many people started out loving each other and now found out, I love that you're away from me?
Yes, good point. That is a very good point. Yes, I'm sure there's many of those individuals walking around out there.
Right. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, once again, you know, you made it as simple as it can be, and it makes a whole lot of sense. Well, but I just, you know, when you was talking, I was like, but isn't that going to be viewed as, you know, even choosing love over my religion? You know, him over my religion? And I can see that big old pot being stirred and, you know, getting ready to explode. But you broke it down. Yeah, so let's talk about this fallacy one. Something we hear all the time as men, you know, and I'm sure some of us has even said it. What is it? Happy wife, happy life?
Yes.
You know, as I said, I hear that a whole lot. And most times as a man, you go, yep. Because we know we love our wives and girlfriends and what have you, but yeah, we know an unhealthy woman is not a good thing in the house.
Right.
Okay, let's just be
right.
honest about it. You know, we know this.
Yeah.
So we do things to avoid that from happening. But you say that's a fallacy,
right.
though. Why?
To me,
because,
it's a fallacy.
Go ahead.
It's a fallacy. It may not be from the back door of hell, but it definitely came out one of the windows. And let me explain to you.
Okay.
It's
now,
not my job.
Player.
Yeah. It's when you step into a marriage, you step into a leadership role. And as a man, loving your wife means I have to take leadership over this. Now, I would do happy things for my wife, but I can't do things to keep her happy because realistically, and every man has said this in the marriage, I don't know what makes her happy. So you spend more time trying to figure out what makes her happy and rather than what the plan is for the family. So you're going out, instead of buying a car that's functional, you're buying a mega luxury car, which takes you out of your budget. Now you have to, you're away from the family to cover something, but she's happy. Well, in 4 or 5 years, when that car is no longer as pretty as it looks, now you're back into another hole. Many men have bought houses. They bought too much house.
Yeah.
They bought too much car. They bought too much clothes or too much on shoes. So you're trying to keep somebody happy when even Scripture tells us the ways of a woman we will never know. And that's why as the head of household, you're the head, and sometimes it's best to say no.
Say that scripture again.
It's the ways of a woman, a man will never know. I don't have the direct address on it,
I just wanted you to say it again, you know, because.
And
I'm like,
that's
like God telling you, hey, what you even trying for? Why? Why are you doing? Why? Okay, gotcha.
And you also have to look at what if she's on her cycle this month? What if she's going through menopause? What if she's going through postpartum depression? You're trying to, instead of being the light to guide her, you're in the tunnel trying to keep her happy. That's going to drive you crazy. When a woman takes a husband, and I've never been a woman, got no plans on being a woman, have no desire to be. But I know when a woman takes a husband, she's looking for that. There's a leader there. And what we as men have to do is lead. We have to lead. And the more mistakes you make, the more mistakes you make today, the less mistakes you make tomorrow. You're going to make mistakes. Just lead. And every day you get better, you get better, you get better. If we do the happy wife, happy life, we'll be broke, we'll be broker, and we'll be the brokest.
Okay. I want to fight you on this, but I've seen it, so, yeah, I do understand that. I do understand that. Okay. Yes, I have seen that exact situation, you know, and the crazy part is you try and give these individuals, you know, a little advice, and they just look at you like, no. Then that other word comes, I love her. Okay. I'm just telling you, you know, you need to slow down, dude, and to rethink this thing, you know, but okay. So happy wife, happy life is not all happy if you're doing it the wrong way, basically, what you're saying. Okay. All right. You know, there was another one in here. I don't know. Where was it? I'm looking. Because my mind is running in different spots right now, especially when you're talking about husband and wife. Family, let's talk about the family. Because now, my big belief is once you get married, the rest of your family ain't got nothing to do with your marriage. Right? Now, that's my belief. As in, you know, our decisions in our house, discussions we have. No, they don't have anything to do with that. And you know, there are some families out there, mother-in-laws, father-in-laws, sisters, uncles, cousins, that get involved in other people's marriage because one of the two of the spouses are running back and telling their business to the family members. And, you know, that's one, okay. one of my big things right there is no. What happens here stays here, you know. And I noticed okay. you wrote it somewhere in your book. I had it highlighted about that. What are your thoughts about that in a marriage? Right.
One of the things you're doing is, my thoughts on that is you're missing so much information and you're constantly starting over from scratch when you can start over and learn from other people's experiences. If your wife wants to tell her family all your business and get information, you don't have to follow it, but now you've got something to critique. It's kind of like when you go out and you're looking for a car. You look different car lots. You get all the information, then you come back home and you make the decision, we'll buy this one, because you've got all the information. The other thing you're doing is you have to be real careful is asking her to eliminate a part of her life. She has to eliminate that. But she's been relying on that information all her life. Now she has to eliminate it. That's a lot of pressure you're putting on a woman. I don't care where she gets the information from it. I don't care what she tells, because believe it or not, anything she's telling them is not anything they've never heard. We're not the first one to ever go through this problem. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. No matter what it is, we ain't the first one.
Yeah.
We're learning from mistakes. We're learning from mistakes they've made so that we can grow better, stronger, and faster rather than – now, you'd be disappointed if they told you or you find out that, let's say, there's quicksand at the end of the sidewalk. You'll be mad because they didn't tell you. You're like, they knew and they didn't tell us. But you put them in a position to stay out of your business, so when danger comes, why would they tell you? I don't have an issue in bringing family in. Now, there are certain things we're not – you know, we want to keep – hey, babe, let's keep this one cool. But if she's seeking advice or you're seeking advice from your family, I don't see an issue because we're coming back together as a family, me and her, and we'll discuss it. Now we have more options to choose from rather than I don't know what you're going to do and I don't know what to do. Those are not three good options.
Okay. But wait a minute. Earlier in the conversation, though, you said, because I'm looking at it like, if this goes on too much, okay, maybe once or twice, yeah, okay, fine. Not completely, totally. However, if every time a major decision comes up running over there, instead of talking to her husband or him, husband, because we're talking about men right now, her husband, yeah. Isn't that slowly sabotage his leadership, the way she views his leadership then?
No. What sabotages the husband leadership is the husband. When the husband feels it's less of a leader. See,
exactly.
and this is my point of view. Right, but this is my point of view. I'm not concerned what your family tells you. If they're giving you information, that's okay. I want you, because I can't force you to trust me, I have to show you I'm trustable. And that takes time. And this is where we mess up. We step into a marriage, and then within 3 to 4 months, we want to jump to step 10. No, you have to show her you can lead. You have to show her you're willing to make mistakes. You have to show her you're willing to say, hey, babe, how do we do this better? I'm leading, but we're walking this road together. Where we mess up as men is we won't lead because many of us are too afraid to make a mistake, so we don't lead. Now she goes to where she saw that leadership in her mother and pulls that into your family. You, babe, what your mother gave you, the advice your mother gave you was great, but we're going to do it this way. Well, mama said, I know, and that's great advice, but this is what we're going to do. Because there's one factor here mama doesn't know, and that's what we're going to do. So now she's learning to say, hey, I can still check with mom, but my man is leading. He screwed up 300 times, but that was last year. Now he's only up to 2 this year. So he's constantly learning. We as men have got to learn to lead.
Hmm.
Problem
okay.
is we jump into followership too quick.
Okay. So also you got a chapter in here about boundaries. And I really want to hear you talk about these boundaries, because I found that very interesting. So let's talk about the boundaries. What are the boundaries, and what boundaries should be set, if any?
Every couple, you have to set boundaries. Boundaries protect the marriage. And we're setting boundaries. And here are the things we're so focused on that we miss those little termites coming in. We get focused on other women, other men. Why are you talking to him? Why are you talking to her? But the part we miss is we got to put boundaries. Boundaries on how we loan money. Boundaries on who can stay with us. Boundaries on what we let come in our house. And how we protect each other is, hey, here's one of the things that women beat up men, and men have no clue. Every man has lost this argument. You never protect me when we get around your family. The guy has no clue what she's talking about. He has no clue, because he is protecting her, but he's protecting her his way rather than the way she thinks. So the boundary is, hey, baby, when you get around my family, you feel you need protecting, tell me what you want me to do, and I'll tell you what I'm doing. So now we see that we're doing something, and we may be able to click that way it works together. Boundaries as far as, hey, do not give a woman on your job more authority than you give your wife. Do not give a man on your job more authority than you give your husband. The other boundary is, every time, don't give a woman on your job more authority than you give your wife. Don't give a man on the job more authority than you give your husband. The other thing you have to understand is, whenever your wife calls you, answer the phone. Your marriage should make every and we as men, we blow this. We say, oh, it's just my wife, I'll call her back. No, that's your wife. Whoever you're talking to is not as important as her. Hey, excuse me, that's my wife. Hey, baby, how you doing? Answer the phone. Hey, I'm in a meeting. Can I call you back? Because what you want to do is you want your marriage to make everybody uncomfortable rather than everybody making your marriage uncomfortable. Because once you make people comfortable in your marriage, they don't leave. Why? Because they're comfortable. You just made me comfortable. And that's where we wonder why so-and-so looking at your woman or so-and-so looking at your man, because you made them comfortable.
Wow.
So you set up barriers. Put barriers on your phone, meaning I tell couples, put a barrier on your phone. On your phone should be a picture of husband and wife kissing, and it shouldn't look like two brothers kissing. You know, brother and sister do. It should be where you're lip locked, because if a woman wants to talk to another man, and she sees a picture of him and his wife hugging and kissing on the phone, she's not going to say, is that your sister? She's going to say, oh, is that your wife? Because she sees intimacy. When your wife comes to your job, if your wife ever comes to your job, she should come looking stunning, because she's representing you. So she's letting all the other women know, hey, you got to come to this level or above. You know, we don't do basement stuff. Hey, we don't. You know, and you go to her job, you're the one you're looking to. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead and finish yours, because, go ahead and finish what you're saying.
Right. So we're putting barriers how we look. We're putting barriers how we present ourselves. We're putting barriers on what people see. You know, if you pick your wife up from work, get out, open the door for her, because you're letting all the other men know, hey, she's worthy. You got to come to this level or above. I can't stop you from talking to her, but if you ain't at this level, she's not going to talk back. And this level gets better every day. This is not the level we had in first grade. This level has gotten better every day. And when I drop her off from work, I'm going to try to stick my tongue down her throat. So she's getting the benefit of it, but I'm sending a message to everybody else. Hey, this one's mine.
Right, well, we didn't.
And I kind of like
her.
you kind of like her? So you're sending that message, hey, this one's mine. But notice what you fell for. The fact of sticking the tongue down your throat made you uncomfortable, so you want to get away from it. And that's what your marriage should do.
Ah. Okay. Okay. I do see that. Yeah, I do see that. Okay. So as a man, we talk about some stuff now. As a man, you mentioned kicking her coming to see you at work. I guess we can hit communication right now. So you should communicate to her how she should. Oh, Lord, this is going to get me in so much trouble. How she should look when she leave the house. If she, you know. Yeah. Okay. So, well, none. No comments or what have you. Or, I mean, yeah, because, see, that's a touchy, that's a very touchy subject, especially today. You know, it really is. Maybe because they don't have them down.
Right. But it's touchy for it's touchy when you're not leading. When you're leading, it's not touchy. Because when you lead, you say, hey, listen, everything that walks out this door represents everything behind the door. When I step out this house, I represent my family. So when people look at me, they say, hey, I saw, they don't call you by name. They tell your wife, hey, I saw your husband. They tell you, hey, I saw your wife. So you represent everything behind the door, and it's up to the husband to set a standard and say, hey, where are you going? Well, I'm going to the store looking like that. Yeah, come with me. No, I'm not going in public looking with you looking like that. And this is the part, and I'm keeping it in context. I am more valuable to go in the store with you in pajamas and a rag on top of your head. No, I'm too valuable. I'm more important than that. And you're more important for me to go in the store looking like a bum. No, we're better than that. We represent, because what we don't want to do is have people tell our kids, your parents look like bums. Or why your mama wearing hoochie shorts? Or why your dad? No, notice, this is where the leader sets the standard. And you know how I know it works? Because the military does it. They set a standard. No, this is what you're going to wear. And that's it. And if you don't, there's some repercussions. So I know it works. Organizations, everybody wears uniform or they have a dress code. And that's the part I'm saying. When you step into a marriage, you're stepping into roles, and we now represent each other. And we have to represent each other. Why are you putting on all that? Because, baby, you're worth it. I'm stepping out. When everybody look at me, they're going to compliment you. Because they're going to say, hey, I saw your husband. He always looks nice. Hey, I saw your wife. She always looks nice. Yeah, because there's a guy in the house that's leading. He's not bullying. He's not dictating. He's leading. And if that's how you're going to dress, I'm not going with you. We're going to ride in separate cars there, and we'll ride in separate cars back.
Not the separate cars.
Yeah, because you're and this is the part, as a man, as a husband, you must understand, I'm more important than that. I will not accept that. You don't give it to your job, you're not going to give it to me. I will not accept it.
You know, John, that is so, it's profound, however, it's simple at the same time. You're like, yeah, that makes sense. So why do we miss that? Yeah. How do we miss that?
Because we were raised on a generation that teaches you, if that's what she want to wear, and I'm not putting women down, I'm just answering that question, if that's what she wants to wear, it's okay. No. It was okay when she was, if she was girlfriend or somebody else, that whatever they did, that's fine. But this is how we do business in this house. And in this house, we set a standard, because we're also going to set a standard for our kids, if we have them or when we have them, we're setting a standard. No. And I used to tell my kids, hey, remember your last name. Well, why I got to do that? Because everything you do reflects on everything in this house. Because we all have the same last name. And it's just, we complicate the simple instead of keeping it simple. It's too simple. Hey, where are you going? I'm going to the store. Like, okay, you coming with me? No way. Why? You act like you don't want to be with me. I don't want to be with you. Because you're not representing me the way you're supposed to. And I take that as a disrespect to our relationship. And once again, the man is leading. And once he implements those things, he will see a change because he's saying, no, babe, that's not us. We're better than that.
Okay. But I can see a whole lot of arguments starting with that right there. But what you said makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Maybe that's why women try and dress us all the time. Yeah. But okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that part right there. Also, you mentioned something else in your book, and I'm just going off things that really popped out at me. About couples, the couple thing. I know you remember that part of the book. Let me see if I got it marked off. About couples, that married couples should only associate with married couples.
Okay.
I think I can hear you. Yeah. So you are sound. You totally believe in that. They should have no single friends, or they shouldn't hang out with single friends.
Let me explain the context of it.
Okay.
Me and my wife are going out. You and your wife are going out. You want to go out with people that's part of the same goals as you. If you got single friends, mm-hmm. fine. But I got to be careful about introducing a fresh piece of meat to single friends, because what I'm doing is I'm bringing something beautiful, something charming, something lovely, something fine, something sexy, something that smells good into the lion's den. What's the lion gonna do? Turn around and walk away in the corner?
No.
And now I want to be careful, and that's where you want to be. This is the leadership part. Hey, there's nothing against single friends. But if we're going out, we want to go out with people who are notice we're growing. Our marriage is not staying still. We're growing. So I want to mm-hmm. be around people who are growing in the same way, because as iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. And nothing against going out with single people, but single people will look at your man or your woman.
Mm.
Will they lust? I don't know. But I'm not bringing that meat to the table. So it's just learning, hey, this is also what I call a barrier. Hey, to keep it safe.
Okay.
Now, if you want to go out with your single friend, cool. We can do picnics or things like that, but we got to be careful of letting – I can beat that to death. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but we
got
to be better.
Let's go. We got time. Just hold on for before you say anything else. All right, y'all, we halfway through the show. So I'm opening up the phone lines. You want to call and ask John a question about his book or marriage advice, give us a call, 347-838-8622. Remember, press the number 1 on your keypad, and we get you in and let you get your question asked, okay? Well, thank you much for that. All right, go ahead, Johnny. Let's deal with this right here. Because I think that this issue in itself is more of a problem for a lot of marriages than anything else, especially today. Yeah. So let's talk some more about this thing here, about the single friends and married couples and so forth and so on. Because, you know, we all got that one record, single friend. You know, we all got that one. You know, and we say, well, you know, they like family. You know, they like family, but we do know they're just trifling, and we'll try anything. So now you got, you know, your best friend you grew up with, and you consider them family, so you want them to be a part of, still a part of you, but now you married with another. I mean, how would that really mess, or do you just say, look, we're gonna set it right here. We'll get together once or twice a month, but other than that, hey, I'm with my husband or I'm with my wife, and that's the way it's going to be. Is that just basically how it's got to be, or is there more into it than that?
There's a little bit more to it, and let me explain.
Okay.
And when I do premarital counseling, my last part of premarital counseling is bring as many of your family and friends into the counseling session, because as it takes a village to raise a child, it also takes a village to save a marriage. your friends, okay. And this is something, it seems so innocent, but our friends miss it. Your friends have to understand your role has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, instead of you being my best friend, she's now my best friend. I'm her best friend. Now we're working to implement that and make it better. What many men do is they get married, they take a wife, but they still want to keep all the homeboys. And all the homeboys always got something they're trying to do. We're doing this. Hey, man, we're going out this weekend. We're going out this Friday. You want to come with us? So even though he wears a ring, he's still performing singleness. That doesn't work well. Now she's going, hey, I'm married to a single guy. So it's not, and this is the part we talked about earlier. As a boyfriend, girlfriend, I can do those things. I should, but I can't. But when you're married, the role has changed. She is now number one in your life. Other than God, she's number one. You're number one in her life. There's a circle in a marriage that can only hold two people. You put anybody else in, you're kicking somebody else out. It's only for two people. It can only hold two.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is we try to bring somebody in, and if I bring my best friend in, I'm kicking my wife out. You've got to – it's a two-people thing. Everybody brings everybody else in, and then they wonder, man, she just don't understand me. You don't understand you. You don't understand your role. And remember, we're stepping into the role. In this role, this is what we do. We leave that role. The other thing you have to understand, with friends, you have to make a commitment, and you and your friends have to make this, hey, do not put me in a situation where I got to lie to your wife, and I will not put you in a situation where you have to lie to mine.
Oh, man. Yes. Yes.
If a friend puts you in that situation, they have just damaged your relationship because your wife is saying, oh, you're going to lie for him and he'll lie for you. So you're asking her to follow you, but you're showing her signs. You're really not that person she might want to follow because I'm seeing all the things that can cause her hurt. You know, she's saying, I'm seeing all the things that can cause me hurt. And yet you say, well, you know how he is. Yeah, but I know you, and you should be better than that.
In that. Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever been in that position before where a friend approached you and wanted you to just tell his wife something totally that you had no clue about? You know,
yeah,
basically a lie for him.
Yeah.
That is not a good feeling.
Right. But this is where you grow because now what you're understanding, and this is where it points itself out, you're not a good friend because a good friend wouldn't do that to me. So I can't change you and your behavior, but I can limit myself being around you. So until you respect my relationship, I'm limiting the time we spend around you. I'm not here to correct you, punish you, discipline you. You're grown. You understand that. And I can't change you, but I can change the way I allow you to affect this relationship. That's the part of leadership. The man recognizes that. He says, hey, as a leader, we got to limit this part. This has to be limited. I'm not telling you not to hang around. I'm not, but we're limiting because this is causing us danger.
Right.
And many men, we don't do that. We're like, oh, man, I'm sorry I couldn't lie for you. No, it's not a friend, and we got to really look at that and be sincere and honest. It's not a friend that will put your relationship in danger so they can go do dirt. No, it doesn't. Now, you've damaged my credibility, my honor, my character, my integrity, and it doesn't bother you.
Hmm.
So your wife is going to be looking at you, and women do this, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, she'll roll over and look at you while you sleep thinking, what else are you doing that I don't know about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or better yet, ask you the question again in a different way.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So why bring that in? Why let somebody bring that in your house, put it on your table, leave it, go out and have a good time and you smelling the stink of it. It's just that part of leadership, like I said, the husband, as a man, as that leader, he has got to lead.
He's got to lead. Okay. Now, let's talk about the yellow sticky. What is the thing about the yellow stickies? Why are they so important?
Yellow stickies work. We use them. I mean, if you go to an office space, you see a whole bunch of yellow stickies. Yellow stickies tell you this is important, but it's not important to implement now or to do right now, to take care of now. So I'm making a little note. The concept of yellow stickies came out because sometimes we get into arguments or disagreements when we can put that off till later. Hey, babe, the concert is good. Let's just discuss this when we get home. Let's finish. Mm-hmm. These tickets cost us $200 or $300. We can talk about this when we get home. Because we both had time to think about it. We both had time to ponder on it and say, you know what, I think I see her point. You know what, I think I see his point. Many couples ruin a night, ruin an evening. Soon something happens, they want to go straight to argument 202. They've graduated 101, now they're 202, and they're trying to get their master's. And
yeah,
they damage. Only to go back 5 or 6 weeks or days later to go, well, we could have solved that different. No, it's a little too late. You have done something that is so important. You have damaged intimacy. Now you want to cuddle with me, but you've damaged intimacy. I may cuddle with you, but my heart's not in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just called me all these names. You said all these things to me. So it teaches couples, hey, we're more important than this answer. We're going to get to the answer, but let's enjoy what we're doing now. And I think I mentioned in the book about a couple that went on vacation and argued the entire vacation. They didn't speak to
vacation.
Each other. Well, they didn't speak to each other the entire vacation. They could have yellow stickied that.
So, okay. So, once again, who decides, both same argument, then both people in the marriage yellow sticky the argument? Just different points.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's what makes the yellow sticky so simple. I value you more than I value the answer to the situation. I value you more than I value the solution. This is where it goes back to the part I keep mentioning. This is where men lead. When a man shows his woman, I value you more than the answer, she really starts believing it. She really starts accepting it, and sooner or later she starts demonstrating it. But when we show them that the answer is more important than you, then you've damaged intimacy, you've damaged communication, and you've made the answer more important than your marriage. So now you got a lot of damages to repair, and they don't repair overnight.
No. No.
So,
you know, I have
why go there?
No, go finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, it's no problem. I mean, why go down a road that you know this is not going to end well? You know, and that's the part that's comical. You know it's not going to end well the minute you got on the road. You know it. But yet you continue to drive it knowing. And like the old man used to say, how that worked for you? It didn't. Now you see. So you went down.
Yeah.
You knew it. You and I've counseled people, and I tell, like, I was counseling a couple once upon a time ago, and the lady, she had a question. I said, ma'am, that question has no good answer. No matter which road you take, that question, you're going in a volcano. You're going in the heat. There is no good answer to that. Leave that alone. There is no winning. No matter which way you go, you lose. You may get what you want, but you damage him. We go on roads that we know this ain't going to end well. And the part that's comical to me is you hit 30 bumps in 20 seconds and you still want to keep going.
Well, yeah, no,
and
you
know
what that is? I'm sorry, but this just popped in my head. You know what that ends up turning into being?
Mm-hmm.
Happy wife, happy life. Happy wife, happy life.
Right, but leadership
really,
says
yeah.
no. And this is the part with
leadership.
No. And that's why, the leader says, no, we're not going down that road. I'm not going down that road. You can go. I'll watch you. I'll frown when you hit them bumps, but I'm not going down that road. Somebody has to stay out of the sewer to get the other person out. I'm not going down that road. Well, we need to talk about it. No, babe, I'm not going down that road. There is no happy. And the thing couples have to understand, there'll be some problems you'll come across. There is no solution. It's just how do we do it better next time. We try to find a solution to things, and there is no solution because he did it the man way. You wanted it done the woman's way. They're both right, but it didn't work. So how do we do it better? And that's the awesomeness of leadership. Leadership says, no, I'm not going down that road. And I'm not taking my family down that road. Now, you can go. And me and the kids will get some popcorn, and we'll watch you, but we're not going.
Then we're going to watch the show from back here. And then when you need our help, we'll be
there
to pull you out.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, though? I know it sounds funny, but I do believe in many cases that's what men do. Now, you know, being a veteran and me being a veteran, we know when we get them little young lieutenants in there and they keep wanting to tell us something that we know is not going to end well, what do we say?
Right.
All right, go ahead.
Yep.
You know, he'll be back.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And half of us will say, hey, y'all come here, watch this.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
And that's the part to understand. We practice leadership outside, but it's awesome when you do it inside. Because it's more important to lead those on the inside of your house than it is on the outside. Because those on the inside, you're preparing to go into the world. And it's where I just caution men, hey, man, lead. If you don't know what to do, you're learning as you go. But if you sit there and do nothing, you don't learn. Lead. There is no option. Lead. It's not lead, follow, get the hell out of the way. It's lead. You have no option. Lead.
Okay. But you are aware there are some females out there that believe they are the lead. Even
right.
if they get married, and now you have a conflict going on, correct? How do you solve that conflict?
Because
no,
and here's how I resolve the conflict. I married an adult. I didn't marry a child. I'm not dictating the words. I'm not beating you down. I'm not yelling and screaming. Yeah.
That's a chapter in the book.
Yeah, so what we do is, if that's what you want to do, you go ahead. But I'm doing this this way. Because, remember, I'm falling under higher leadership that's told me, hey, this way actually works. Now, when you go out there, you get yourself either financial difficulty, emotional difficulty, physical difficulty, I'm not going to throw it in your face, but I'm letting you know, hey, that's why I went this way.
That's a good point, Johnny, right there, what you just said.
Yeah.
Hold on for a minute. We can't just glaze over that right there. You know, once you make the mistake, you said the key word, I don't hold it against you. But in a lot of marriages, that is not the case, am I right? And that creates more friction also.
Right, because remember, just like you, she is also growing. And I want to grow the best woman because later on down the line, if anything happens to me, I can turn this leadership over to good hands. But if she doesn't know how to lead the family, we got some problems because she never seen a leader. And if she's never seen a leader, she's going to go back to what she saw in her house. But in this house, going back to that in Joshua 24, he said, that's for me and my house. And we're going to serve the Lord. That's how we're doing it. Now, you got an option. You can leave the house. It's okay. I'm not forcing you. But in this house, this is how we do it. And when men lead, they change. Well, it's my money. I'm going to do what I want to. Baby, go ahead. Knock yourself out. But I'm limiting these funds from you. So everything you get in trouble with, you put it in your name. But there's going to be a repercussion to that. I'm just letting you know. So if you make that hole and you dig that hole, when it's time to fill that hole, you got to find your own dirt. Because I've got to show you, you did something, I forgive you, but there are consequences to it. So if you go out and buy this $100,000 car because you think you look cool and now you can't afford it, I'm not covering that bill.
That's kind of hard.
Matter
of
fact, but you only have to implement that lesson once. If you never do it, you're constantly doing it over and over and over again. The minute you implement that lesson, how many men will go and stick their hand in an ant bed? They only learned that lesson once.
That is true.
What are you doing? I'm going to stick my hand in that bed, man. I love it. No, you learned that lesson once. You never do it again on purpose. So sometimes that hard lesson makes an easy road. That easy lesson makes a lot of bumpy road. Wow, oh, I'm going to help you. No, you got into that being disobedient. You're going to get out of it. I forgive you, but you're going to cover that cost.
I guess you do have a point. You do have a point. Some would say, well, I learned the lesson. You know, yeah, it was my first time I messed up, but I learned my lesson. You know, please help me. You know, in today's society, it may actually be the female car. I mean, the only transportation they have. You know, now you have to make another decision. You know, ask the man of the house.
But notice,
you jump up because that's your only transportation, or do you try and teach her this lesson, you know, and then go back and correct it by getting another vehicle? You see where I'm going with this? Eventually, I see what you're saying. If you correct it the first time, it should nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife would say. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then
you
have to think about the priorities of your family as well. So how would you, I mean, okay, we need this transportation, you know, because you can use the car as an example. So we need this transportation. That's all we got.
Right.
Yeah, she done screwed up, but we still need this transportation. So now, to me, as a man, I would say, you know what? Okay, this all we got. I got to step in and help on this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. How can I put this? So, in other words, you see the conflict that can arise from, you know, certain situations. So how do you balance that out? Because I understand the part about teaching the lesson. Trust me, or, yeah, watch this. But in the end, if it's going to hurt my family, you know, do I sit back and just let it be?
Okay, I'm answering the question what I would do. However you choose to work it, however the audience does, that's on them. But if I don't implement that corrective action, it's going to happen again, and many men can verify it's happened again. And then they go back and they say, what I should have done was do this. That they had the answer, but the fact that they refused to lead, or the fact that what you've just done, they brought in 400 what-ifs. That never manifested itself. And as quick as we say, what if this happens, we can say, what if it don't? This action has to be, because if we're on the same team, we can't do things like this again. We're on the same team. So if you do this, you're telling me you want to be on a different team. I mean, that's cool. I respect your decision, but I'm not going to punish the rest of the family for it. So take, for instance, a car. If you want to spend that much money on a car, knock yourself out. Do you know a $400 car and a $400,000 car will get you to the same place?
Yep.
It gets you to the same place. And one of them gets you there, and you don't have the stress because you're not worrying about somebody hitting it, somebody stealing it. You're like, hey, man, that's $400. But notice, stress is not there. You get that $400,000 car, that very expensive car, you too worry about somebody scratching it, somebody hitting it, somebody. You got, and there's so many worries you have. And this is what that leader is showing. Hey, we are not there yet to have this luxury. We will get there, but we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you'll hear, well, all my friends are driving. Okay, fine. I'm just telling you, we're not there yet. And it's not something to sit up. It's not something to sit up all night. And it's just me. I'm not sitting up all night arguing and debating it. I already told you, we're not there yet. And I'm not doing. I'm looking out for the family because God is going to hold me accountable. I can delegate authority, but I cannot delegate responsibility.
Hmm.
So he's going to say, yeah, but you listened, like he told Adam, but you listened.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, yeah, but you listened. You listened to her over me. So it's just putting those things in context where you say, hey, no, babe, I can't cover that because if I cover it now, in a couple of years or months, you'll do the same thing again. And you can interview many men, and they'll tell you, I should have put a stop to that the first time it happened.
Okay, you can kind of hold in what I was about to ask you. Yeah, I've heard that quite often as well. I said that myself. Yes, I have. So I see your point. I may have to yellow sticky it though for a moment.
Just to go
through the options, but yeah. I see your point. I really do. I see your point. And it makes sense. It makes sense. Because the longer you let it go on, the worse it gets eventually. That's what I found in my years of being here on this face of this earth. If you don't stop certain situations at that time. So I got you. All right, y'all, the number is 347-838-8622. I'm talking with Mr. John A. Myers, author of a great book, man, How to Love Your Wife, only 96 pages. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And it has some very good stuff. Tell me about Pay Yourself. That is a very interesting title, Pay Yourself. Yeah. Because we got about 30 minutes here. We talk about Pay Yourself in the Blended Family. Blended Family, oh my God. That's a headache in itself. But let's talk about Pay Yourself first.
One of the things that men do, and oh my God, we've all done it. We take our hard-earned money and we give it away. Here, baby, you handle it. You pay all the bills. You handle this. And then we go back to them consistently. Hey, I need $20. Let me get $50. Let me get this. My concept and what I've seen, if you work for the money, it's your money. You handle your money. When a man pays himself, he feels more like a man. It's something about him. I think Bruno Mars says something like, I'm a different man with some money in my pocket. Something like that, he said. But it's something about you. You feel self-worth because you worked and you earned. And every man feels different when he got money in his wallet. It's just something about you because you earned that. You worked for that. So I recommend totally you pay yourself. You set up your house budget, and then out of that house budget, you say, hey, okay, this is what the house needs, but I have to pay. If you pay yourself $5 a week, whatever, you're paying yourself, and you're rewarding yourself. Many men don't pay themselves. They turn everything over to their wife. Now, here's what happens. You damage intimacy. You damage intimacy because now it takes you back to your childhood where you're going to your parents to ask for money. You've empowered her out of the concept of what the role is supposed to be. So you empowered her. Now you get the questions. What did you do with the $20 I gave you last year? I gave you $50 back in 2006. What did you do with that? So now you're answering questions on the money you've made. It damages intimacy because now you look at her as the authority figure rather than your helpmate, your love, your spouse, your wife, your precious jewel. And she will ask you those questions. What are you doing with this money I'm giving you? Not what are you doing with your hard-earned money. What are you doing with this money I'm giving you? Because you've empowered her, and this is going to get me in trouble, but I'm prepared to handle it. Many women can't handle that power. And you then you hear the guy say,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you'll hear the guy say, it's my money. I work for my money. What the people tell me to do with my money? It's my money. But he ain't saying it to her, but he's mumbling it to his friends. So the house is now run her way when God said this should be run this way. I told you how to run it. Why are you doing it that way?
You know, throughout this whole discussion about your book, you know, one thing I keep noticing is one of the most important parts about this whole whatever it is the communication part of it, you know?
Right.
Because you said she say or he'll say or you'll say, and once you get thinking about it, it's about the words, you know, the communication part, you know, the
right.
clarity of what your boundaries are, you know? That, yeah. And it just slapped me upside the head, and I'm like, wow. Because what you're saying is making a whole bunch of sense. Most men be like, yeah. You know, I'm sure there's some women out there going, man, he crazy. But get a stick in and come back and tell us what you think. Yeah. But let's talk about this women family real quick.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, I told you I read the book. Yellow stick in and come back, and then we have the discussion. But, yeah, blended families. What is the take on blended families now?
That can be
a nightmare.
Right. But what it is, it's when the husband and wife establish a policy from the beginning. This is the policy we establish. If it changes, this is not going to work. The two most important people in this house is me and you. That's it. I'm accepting everything you brought in as mine, and you're accepting everything I brought in as yours. Is no my kid, your kid anymore. Effective today, there's no your kid, my kid. It's ours. We're setting that up. There is no hidden communication as far as, well, he's doing this. No, we're not having that hidden communication because that hidden communication kind of plays sides, and we know kids will play sides. You accept everybody as this is mine. As the leader, he accepts the leadership role of saying, because he knows what he's going into. Them kids ain't going to pop up from under the bed in the middle of the night and say, oh, by the way, we're here. So you know that. And you've got to make that decision before going into the marriage. Hey, can I lead this family? Answer is yes or no. Second question, will I lead this family? Answer is yes or no. If either one of those answers are no, don't go in that family.
All right.
But
now, we understand that.
Understand that. But for me, effective immediately, the minute we say I do, everything in this house falls under my authority. And I said authority. I'm not saying bully, dictatorship, thuggish. It's my authority. No, baby, this is how we're doing it. This is how we're doing it. So I'm setting a leadership role for everybody to follow. Whether right, wrong, or indifferent, there's a role we can follow that we're going to get better at. Now, in the blended family, everybody gets a hug, everybody gets a kiss. Well, I don't kiss my kid. Okay, fine. Well, everybody in the house get a hug, everybody get a kiss. I'm just letting you know. If I yell at you, you got to give me a hug. Because what we're doing is we're setting a change of this family is mine. And you know how I know it works and why we blow up blended families too much and make it more difficult than it is? Because we have jobs, and not everybody in our job is our family.
Hmm.
And we leave.
Hmm.
And we make them function as one. And we direct, we lead, we guide, we counsel, and we implement. If we can do it on our jobs, why do we do it at home? But we don't do it at home because we get so emotionally, well, they're going to fight me. I don't care if you fight me. I'm still doing it my way. Well, they're going to badmouth me. Okay. I understand they're going to badmouth you, but we're still doing it this way. Well, they're not going to like me. I understand that. Still going to do it my way. This, because you're the leader. You have to lead, and you can't. And, you know, our parents have told us over and over again, if you're concerned whether people like you or not, you're going to have a rough, rough life.
Mm. Yeah.
Lead. They'll learn to adjust, and then go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm thinking, and, yeah, all that's good. Until it comes to the word, the discipline. Now, I've seen many relationships break up because of this right here. It's one piece of a blended family, the discipline of the children.
Right.
Yeah. So how would you even go about approaching that?
Because
in your
I've already established the leadership, and I'm letting you know right away. And I'm letting everybody in the house know. And these are the things that will get you in trouble. And these are the things that get you killed.
Mm.
And I'm letting you know this is the seriousness of this. There is no skating around it. And you're also setting a point. And this the part with the blended family that where we run into problem is mom and daddy not on the same role. Because mama's still looking at those as her babies. She got to protect them. And daddy's trying to, in many situations, daddy's trying to bring the family together when mama's so afraid that I got to protect my kids. And I'll throw a note in there that makes no sense. Why would you marry a man that you got to protect your kids from?
Oh, my goodness. Talking about a good question.
Yeah. So
talking about a good question.
That's where... Yeah, that to me is an oxymoron, and there may be some legitimate answers, but if that's the feeling you got going in, then you're already sabotaging your relationship. It's already sabotaged, and it's going downhill because once kids, they don't mean to, but they are, once they realize who they can play, they'll play them like a cheap fiddle.
That is so true. That is so true.
You know, like I heard a guy say, they're snipers and diapers. You know, they will take you out. So you have to come together, and this is where the leader, going into a blended family, he has to let everybody know, listen, this is how this family is going to run. When we say I do, these are the changes that's going to happen. I'm letting you know. And he sits down with his wife, and he said, David, if there's an issue with this, we can put this off. But once again, going back to if I'm the leader of the family, everything in this family that messes up reflects on me, reflects on you. I don't want to go to prison to get somebody out to implement discipline when if we implement it now, we don't have to go there and do that.
You make
and
it sound
it's just
so
leading.
Simple.
Hey, it is. We complicate the simple. We complicate the simple. When you go in a job, your job has all the rules. All the rules listed.
Mm-hmm.
What time you got to be there, what your uniform is, what this. I mean, it's got everything listed. It works at home.
Yeah.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Just don't use it.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, going in there with this is my house, my rules type of attitude, just not going to get it. Some of us men, we go in there, we're like, okay, look, if you're going to be mine, it's going to be like this, all right?
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Oh, I have nothing wrong with that. I'm saying society today isn't set up like that.
But
you know, and
I'm not running my house from society.
Okay. See, that's the point right there. Okay. I got you to say it. Okay. You're not running your house for society. Okay.
No. And here's the point I'm trying to I want to emphasize. It's done out of love. It's not done out of being a bully, or it's kind of like, hey, in this house, at this age, you got to be in the house at this time. If I say you got to be in the house before midnight and you're coming in at 2 in the morning, we got to put some discipline in.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got to be hard discipline. Discipline is done out of love. It's not done out of hate. If you're coming in this house 2 o'clock in the morning, you're supposed to be in by midnight, then you're staying out till the next day. Now I'm going to worry and I'm going to panic. Right. So you're learning. I remember what happened last time. No, man, I got to get in. It's cold outside. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's learning. If you implement it the first time, like we talked about, you don't have to worry about trying to do it again. But if you don't, you're going to be pacing the floors. Where are they? Oh, it's late. They're not answering their phone.
You know, I was just sitting here. I went back for a moment because I remember getting in trouble one time. And listening to what you're saying, first thing she would say is, wait till your daddy get home. You know?
Yep.
Wait till your daddy get home. And it's just like that little tingle of fear would hit you. Like, oh, no, you know? Yeah, so I'm reminiscing of my childhood and then growing older and thinking about the stuff in your book, and it really it resonates, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
You have some very good points in here. I would highly recommend people read it because it is an outstanding book. Yeah, we just covered a few pieces of it, but yeah, it's only 96 pages long, y'all. Get the book. It'll do you good. You'll learn something, all right? I even learned something, okay? So get the book. Golly, How to Love Your Wife. In fact, y'all, I know a lot of y'all on your phones right now, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. That's where you can find it. Hey, go on and buy the book. Sit down with your husband. Y'all read it together. Y'all may learn something. Well, ain't no man. Y'all will learn something because you're going to see yourself in the book. Okay? I'm just going to be honest. You're going to see yourself in the book, and you're going to be like, oh, my God, I didn't know I was doing that. Then next thing you know, y'all going to have a house full of yellow stickies.
Oh, yeah.
That'll work. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I got yellow stickies right here somewhere in front of me. Have no use for them, but they're here. But Johnny, man, it's been great talking to you. We only got like 15 minutes left. So before we let you out, what other projects you got going on? You got anything coming on? Uh-oh. Somebody didn't put their hand up, Johnny. So let's go on and see.
Okay.
All right. Well, somebody called in at the right time, I guess. They want to get it in. Okay. ASO 8525, talk to me.
Hello. The question is, what kind of marriage is this? Is this a covenant marriage or a traditional marriage?
The answer to the question, a marriage is a covenant. How you do it, if you do it traditionally, it's still a covenant. But a successful marriage is one where both of you work to keep it nourished, keep it fresh, keep it important, where you elevate each other rather than degrade each other. So when you step into a marriage, you're automatically stepping into a covenant. Whether you do it traditionally or non-traditional, it's still a covenant. And it's just, hey, we have to make sure I treat you more important than anybody else and you treat me more important, and then we grow from there. I hope that makes sense.
Please give me the definition, your definition of a covenant marriage.
A covenant marriage to me is when we stand before God as our leader, as our guide. A marriage is made up of three things. A marriage is made up of a worship services in the book of Genesis where Adam and Eve and God led. A marriage is made up of a relationship with God in the middle because we got two imperfect people. we need somebody to let us know, hey, this is what to work on. But the part is also made up of as a business, and that's something we forget. So that covenant is, I will, as we uphold God, I'm going to uphold her. As we uphold God, she's going to uphold me as that leader of the house, the one that's standing there putting the neck on the line. And when you say traditional, it all depends what tradition you're referring to, because there's so many other traditions. And it's just dialing down what tradition you're talking about, because you can go an African tradition, a Hebrew tradition, a Hindu tradition, Islamic tradition.
I'm talking about worldly traditions.
Be a little more specific. Your question is a little vague.
You contradict yourself when you say it, covenant, and then which, please express the covenant more, because I know of a covenant as being between God, man, and woman.
Yeah,
and being led by God, being led by God. But what I hear here is, you know, because that's an equal yoke in there, and they both being drawn up to God. But what I hear here is God. Now, I don't even hear God. I hear man leading the family. It's more of his opinion instead of God's. This is not when two walk together in agreement. This is
right.
the man's dictation. But please tell me, how does this compare to a covenant marriage?
Okay, my apologies. I thought I expressed that it was led by God, and I expressed that early in the show, that when the question came up about being unequally yoked, that God speaks to that man, and the man gets his direction from him, which is proven all through scriptures, that we get our direction from God. And a great example is, let's look at Abraham and Sarah. God spoke to Abraham, told him everything he needed to do. Abraham went and told Sarah. Abraham got all his guidance from God, and then Abraham gave that guidance to Sarah. So that covenant marriage, and pardon me if I didn't make it plain, it is that we have a covenant with an awesome God, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Alpha and Omega. Matter of fact, many of us take that vow in a church with a Bible, so that's the covenant we make. I will be your God.
Well,
and
then
my question is,
give me something in the New Testament instead of going to the Old Testament. The letter of the law kills and destroys. So give me something in the New Testament under, you know, we're followers of the way. So please help me.
Okay. Something in the New Testament would be husband love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Something in the New Testament would say, wives, honor your husbands. Husbands, love your wives, treating each other with dignity and respect. That's the New Testament. But now, also, if you're looking at it, the New Testament is nothing but the Old Testament with Christ here, having already came. The Old Testament is Christ coming.
Wait a minute.
New Testament is Christ here.
Stop. You said something before you changed. You said husbands. Let's get back to that. That verse.
Okay. Ephesians 5.
Okay. All right, just a minute before you get started, sir, may I have your name?
My name is Ronald.
Ronald, okay. Hold on for a minute, Ronald. All right, people, we have 9 minutes left in live air time. I have decided we aren't going to go over. So if you are not on the phone lines, you need to get here. 347-838-8622, because we're not leaving here until Ronald gets his answers. So let's get ready to rock and roll. All right, go ahead, Ronald.
My question, he made the statement a few seconds ago about husbands and wives supposed to love one another. So let's hear that. How are
you
expounding on that statement? How does this kind of marriage, wait a minute, this what you're talking about in marriage, how does that expound on that statement?
Do you have your Bible in front of you?
That you made. That you made. I'm asking you how you inspired. You wrote the book. So tell me how does what you're saying, the leadership of the man, but yet you just said husband and wife. So how does I'm confused. It's a contradiction.
Yeah, your question is kind of confusing me. So let me try to answer what I think you're saying. Based on what Scripture has put it, the way the book is written is that husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. But one of the things that Christ did, he established it wasn't a Christ did anything for me. No.
I'm trying
to ask you a question.
That's not what I'm asking you.
Okay, then your question is too vague for me to really see what you're asking.
Repeat what you said, what I said, a covenant and all that. Repeat what you said, husband and wife. You quoted that. Repeat it.
Right. I said Ephesians 5. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her.
And what was the next statement you said?
And it says wives, and it tells wives to honor their husbands. And if and 1 Peter 3, starting at verse 10, it says, if a wife lives with an unbelieving husband, she's still supposed to give him honor, but by her conduct, he may be won to the Lord.
You didn't say it that way the first time. Let's see how you said it.
Right, I didn't put 1 Peter 3 in there, but I did now.
No, you put something else in there.
I put Ephesians 5, and then I just told you 1 Peter 3.
Yeah, well, you put Ephesians 5, and then you must have cut it off or something. But I'm just curious, because what I hear you say, and I don't hear God in there nowhere. All I hear is man. Making
okay,
the decision
well, let me go back and
without
that.
Being led by
I'm
God,
sure.
Without the couple being led by God. Like what
okay,
I heard
sure.
you say, like what I heard
whoa,
you
whoa.
Say something about
Ronald,
other people
Ronald,
your business.
Ronald, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in all fairness, when we first started the show, he did mention God, and that's what his book was basically based off of, was based off of, as far as what he's saying. He did say God at first, and then he said Adam, and then you know, so forth and so on. So he did say that. Now, I'm just curious.
That's
did he answer your question?
That
was your question.
That's not my question. My question
okay,
is, so far,
okay.
what I hear is Old Testament.
Okay.
I'm asking, okay, Christ is in the picture. We got grace and mercy. So my question is,
right.
how you come up here, you saying this about, you basically basing the marriage on the Old Testament. And my question is, what does Christ have to, I mean, right now, I hear all this, the man, not
right.
we come together, not we have a problem, we pray about it and everything, and meditate
okay.
on it until we come up to a
okay.
decision. Like you said
okay.
something about boundaries, other people,
right.
boundaries, and you said something about people going to their family, letting family get into their business. If you,
right.
I seem to remember a passage in the Bible which says, forsake all others, cling to one another. That right
okay,
there.
You're taking that passage out of context.
I heard you take stuff out of context, so I'm just trying to figure out.
Okay, so let me ask you, hang on. Let me explain to you how you take it out of context and how that doesn't add up. Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph and Jacob never forsake their family. Matter of fact, all of Jacob's sons stayed with him. Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going to prepare a place for you, so where I am, there you may be also. So we're going to stay with him. Everything is done under Hebrew customs, and in the Hebrew customs, when a man would take a wife, he would build onto his father's house. And they would move in there, and they would build on. And that's what they did. And that's the scripture we've taken out of context, they forsaken all others. And I'll show you how far out of context it makes. If you marry a woman and you now tell her she can never go around her family, or she tells you you can never go around your family, that's a detrimental part to a relationship. You have a slave mentality I own you, you can never do this. That doesn't work well in a marriage.
That's not the answer to the question. The question was, I heard you say, by family getting into your business, basically. You share what happens in your household. With your family.
No,
Hold on for a minute, gentlemen. Hold on for a minute. Okay? Before we get to what you said, Johnny, Ronald, what are your thoughts on that part of it? I mean, since you brought it up, family in your business, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that is, hey, what happens in your household stays in your household. You discuss that with your other half, whether it's the wife or the husband. You discuss that. Y'all being led by God, you pray. You come up with your solution. Because everybody relationship is different. It may look the same way, but it's different. And it's always an X factor in there. You can listen to people and gleam out, but you don't tell them your business. I've seen too many people. You mentioned something about married people being with married people. And I've seen that, married people being with married people, for instance. And that in itself, because we talk about married people who are committed to marriage, who are committed to each other, who are committed to God. That type of married person, yes. But when you got married people who are only married in name only, and then I heard you say something about single people and all that. I've seen too many situations where the married woman or man, here you think y'all hanging out, yeah, y'all married and all this and all that, but somebody else in the group hanging, doing these same things, but they married to each other. And then they messing with somebody else that's married.
Right. Let me pin for a second.
Yeah.
However, but you also heard me say, however you run your house, if it works for you, that's fine. You do that. I'm just showing you a different way, and I'm showing you a way that actually works. I would hate to think that a son or a daughter that I raised and gave them life and all the things to benefit their family now finds me unworthy enough to seek advice from me. And I would watch them go down a hill of financial, emotional, physical turmoil rather than coming to me to seek advice. That's not why God put us on this earth, to live isolated. I think that's a fallacy, but if it works for your house, awesome. But if it doesn't work, why do it? Families that function isolated, they usually suffer more trouble than need. No family is meant to be that way, I don't think. I haven't seen it in Scripture. Everybody relied on somebody. And just because you're seeking advice doesn't mean you have to take it. That's where I said the husband and wife comes back together. They look at it and they say, hey, fine, this is what we do. But we're learning from somebody else's mistake. If you have family members that you deal you can't deal with and you never want to be around, that's fine. That's your life. You run it. But fire that's isolated by itself will burn out quickly. A fire
will
burn brighter.
That's not what I said. I did not say isolation. What I said was when you have problems.
You're
trying
isolated
to work out, but you focusing on isolation. And that's not what I'm talking about.
That's what you said.
You said with a family, hey, they advise them, talk about their business and all that. So what you're saying is your most intimate things or your finance or whatever it is, you go into your family and discuss that.
But if I value my family's opinion, like my parents, and I value their opinion, why would I not use that information to learn from what mistakes they've made? If your kids
with your wife, with your family?
Yes.
Are you going with your wife to her family?
I said yes. I'll go with her. We're going to get information. Yeah, we're going to get information, But what we're also doing is we're taking the mistakes they made and we're applying it to our life. And I said that. I think let me see if I can end this. Whatever works for you, congratulations.
Okay. You would. I'm still confused about what you're saying. You're getting here.
Right,
and you,
but
I still don't hear you say anything about, hey,
but,
we going to God. I don't hear you say we going to God
but,
and let him work it
okay,
out.
But that's not, hang on.
Okay, well, Ronald. So basically, Ronald, hold on for a minute, Johnny. Ronald, so basically, basically, what it's saying, what he's trying to say is, whatever you do, he doesn't hear you saying verbally right now, God is in control of the house. You know, even though I'm in the show, you say God, Adam, Eve, and you know how that worked out for him. Yeah. Okay. And I'm still lost about the New Testament part. I really am. But okay, I'm sure Ronald gonna break it down eventually. Ronald, what I need you to do is break it down to the simplest form as to what are you asking Johnny, and what are you trying to get him to see, if anything? Or are you just seeking clarification? Or are you just trying to get clarification of what he's saying?
I'm trying to get clarification of what he's saying. I'm trying to find out what his wait a minute. I'm trying to find out also what is his definition of an equal yoke.
Okay, that's the, and I explained that early in the marriage. I mean, in the show, I explained that. But if you miss it, here's my definition. Equally yoked means we serve the same God. That's equally yoked. Doesn't mean we're the same color. Doesn't mean we're the same height. Doesn't mean we got the same job. It means we serve the same God. We are yoked. And what a yoke is, and let me just take you back, a yoke is what they will put on an ox to pull. So we're both under the same yoke. And Jesus said, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So we're equally yoked. Both of us pray to the same God. Both of us worship the same God. Both of us believe the same thing. We study the same scripture. I'm trying to break it down as plain as possible. Did that answer your question?
Well, let me ask you this. Is equally yoked, you have the same
Let's go back.
No,
I answered your question.
Yeah.
You answered mine.
No,
that did not answer
my question. No, it did not.
Then I don't think I can answer your question.
My next question for that is, I mean, I'm just curious. If you say we're in the same faith, but believe the goal is to hit a mark. Am I right?
Right.
The goal is to hit a mark. Okay.
Well, what's the mark?
You equally yoke. The way Paul and Jesus described things was agricultural. Agricultural. A yoke is what you had on two animals. You had on two horses. And what I'm asking you, you said that in the faith that you're talking about faith. I'm talking about the way you get to that mark. I'm talking about how do you get to that mark. Are you a synchronized team going to that mark? Are you a synchronized unit going to the mark with the same belief in each other and the same belief in God? Or are you getting up here? Because, see, egos come in. Ego.
What?
That comes in. If you have.
Right. But here, hang on a second, Ron. Here's what you're doing. You're asking questions you already know the answer to, and you already know what I'm going to say. What I'm believing is you're asking questions to generate a response from me to catch me in something. If you say you caught me in contradiction, my apologies. Hang on, Ron. I let you finish, and I gave you that courtesy, and I just asked the same. Everything you said, I've said. You probably didn't hear it. I apologize if I said it too quick, too slow. You probably didn't hear it, but I said that. The same analogy you just used, I used. Equally yoked. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't. In every relationship, no matter what you have, friend, whatever, one's faith is always stronger than another. But we're walking in the right direction to grow. So no husband and wife team is going to have the same amount of faith. Jesus said, if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you can do all these things. But that mustard seed grows. So some people stay a mustard seed. Some people mustard seed grows to a large plant. But they're under the same authority of God, and they know who that God is. It's not a God, it's the God. So I hope that answers your question. If you dig any more, I'm going back to that same answer I just gave you.
My question is, what is the difference between faith and belief?
They're actually, it's the Bible said those that come to God must believe that he is God and reward of those that diligently seek him. Faith is believing. You believe in the chair you're sitting in will hold you.
Okay.
So that's, you got faith in that chair. It's a belief. You're trying to split hairs. You're splitting hairs.
No, I'm not splitting hairs. Basically is you're splitting hairs to make the man dominate. And that's the way you said it, is because I don't hear.
No, I never said that.
I'm finished. I never said that. But you're saying something I didn't say.
Matter of fact, I went on record to say he's not dominating. He's not egotistical. So
I said the way it sounds. That's what I said, the way it sounds. But you answered my question.
I understand that.
I do thank you.
Okay. You're quite welcome. Pleasure speaking. Anybody else? You there?
Well, I'm here.
Oh, okay. It just went silent.
I'm waiting to hear the rest of it. You answered my question for me personally.
Okay, great.
You let me know.
All right, great. I mean, it's been answered, so I'm glad I was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You there, Eric?
To know me is to love me, because in terms I can be misunderstood. Like the preacher said it would. All I ask is you will try loving me. All I ask is you will try loving me. 'Cause I heard it ain't easy. My feelings from showing. When I'm going through, you're the first one to notice what I'm going through. Your love's like medicine.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.